continuing our controversial seminar. Controversial topics in this school, issues. Today this subject is on following Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada often told us that Krishna consciousness is very easy, and he showed by his practical example Krishna consciousness is very easy. And Prabhupada, being amazingly empowered by Krishna, presented the philosophy of Krishna consciousness to us who have no background or beginning in that. He presented the intricacies of Krishna consciousness in such a way that even us, when I say us, I'm talking about those of us from the Western countries or those with no background of Vedic culture or philosophy, could understand the principle, which is to serve Krishna, surrender to Krishna, and take that up in our lives. Prabhupada demonstrated Krishna consciousness very easy. Chant Hare Krishna, serve Krishna, give up personal desires. I heard it said, it's not in the folio, so it could be one of those Prabhupada says, but anyway, the essence is one of the first devotees in Europe told me that Prabhupada had said, you just hold on to my dhoti and I'll take you back to Godhead. So you have to hold on to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. That basic thing is there. And in the early days of ISKCON, it was just accepted by everyone, all the members, except there were one or two who left Prabhupada due to lack of faith. But otherwise, everyone had the basic faith that we just do what Prabhupada says. Prabhupada's completely perfect. Prabhupada's in contact with Krishna. Prabhupada knows Krishna. We just follow and do what Prabhupada says, and we'll go back to Godhead. It's very easy. And in those early days, when we were less sophisticated and knowledgeable, we would often say, Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that, and then Prabhupada said, okay, that's right, what Prabhupada said. Sometimes that was misused. Devotees would quote something that Prabhupada had said that he hadn't actually said. That sometimes happened also. But that also just goes to show that the weight that was attached to what Prabhupada said, because if someone wanted to present something even that wasn't true, they'd precede it with Prabhupada said, supposing that that would give, or it would actually make people believe, oh, Prabhupada said, okay, all right, that must be correct. However, very sorry to say that at the present time in Prabhupada's society, in Prabhupada's house, the very position of Srila Prabhupada has, or is being attempted to be, relativized. And instead of thinking of Prabhupada as absolute, and instead of accepting that Prabhupada is accepting simple faith, Prabhupada is a pure devotee of Krishna, we simply follow, then even what Prabhupada says and what Shastra says is come up for questioning by certain persons within ISKCON who feel that, well, it seems that they feel that Prabhupada is, they have better knowledge than Prabhupada on some issues. Prabhupada often used to say, don't keep a guru like a pet dog. pat him on the head and tell him, now you sit, now you stand, now you jump. Prabhupada also criticized Christianity. He didn't criticize Jesus, but he said that if you call yourselves Christians, then why don't you follow Christ? That was the fault he found, that the Christians, there's nothing wrong with Christ, but why don't the Christians follow him? The Christian won't say, I'm not following, they'll say, I'm following Jesus. But Prabhupada would point out, it's not enough to keep a picture of Jesus on your wall and say, I'm a Christian. You actually have to know what he said and follow what he said. Then you could actually be called a Christian. Simply to say, I believe in Jesus. I believe in Jesus, but I don't follow anything he said. But then you're not a Christian. So like that, I don't think there's anyone in ISKCON who will openly say that, well, I'm not following. Everyone will claim I'm following Prabhupada. But as I will attempt to point out in this session, in many ways, we may not be. It may be that Prabhupada has become for us a picture on the wall, who we say, Jai Prabhupada. But don't take that so seriously. There are devotees, or supposed to be devotees, in our movement who openly question Prabhupada's position on, or Prabhupada's teachings on various issues, or the teachings of Shastra on various issues, or they try to give a different interpretation according to their own understanding of Shastra. Now, in many cases we've seen that devotees, or I don't even feel like saying devotees for people who they have such attitudes. But anyway, in a general way, we can say devotees. Many appear to have been, to have gone back to their old way of thinking in many ways. That we come from various backgrounds. Most of in the Western countries, the devotees who joined in the 1960s and 1970s, they are mostly from hippie backgrounds. The hippie way of thinking is eclectic, which means that you collect a little bit from here, a little bit from there, mix it up according to your own taste, and that's what you claim to follow. And you never have any fixed position, but you can change it at any time according to your whim. This is, although the hippies appear to be rebelling against the establishment, as they called it, actually the hippie mindset was very much in tune, was or is very much in tune with the prevailing mindset of modern society, which is still true, even though we don't have a rebellious hippie movement anymore. But the overall outlook of the modern Western world especially, and increasingly so all over the world because of Western cultural dominance, is secular, liberal and humanistic, which are three related terms which are all different flavors of atheism. Secular, actually secular means that, or Prabhupada pointed out that India wants to be a secular state, so secular means that they should, it means not giving any preference to any religion. Prabhupada said that means you should promote, everyone should follow some religious basis. But secular, it practically means non-religious. Secular, liberal, humanistic, they all of these interrelated outlooks have the at their root the belief that there is no absolute truth. Asatyam apatishtante jagad ahur anishvaram, as Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. The atheistic mentality, which was not only present 5,000 years ago, but is present in human society throughout the ages, is that there's no particular, there's no actual truth, there's no actual basis to society, there's no controller of the universe. So, secular means there's no there's no belief in any or acceptance of any absolute principles. And humanistic, which means that the idea that promotion of the benefit of the human race, this is the topmost principle in human society. That we should improve the condition of the human race in terms of its, in terms of this world here now, not accepting that the human life is meant for any higher spiritual purpose. As we're quoting Marx yesterday, religion is the opium of the people. And liberal means that everyone should be, the liberal outlook is that everyone should be allowed to pursue happiness, the happiness of the individual, as far as possible. Happiness defined in terms of sense gratification, both gross and mental, gross, mental and intellectual. Everyone should have the freedom and the facility and should be encouraged to pursue sense gratification as long as it doesn't harm others. And everyone should be encouraged to just do whatever they feel is right for them. In hippie parlance, be here now. So this is the predominating mindset of the modern Western world, in which it is considered that everyone should be allowed to do as they like within certain parameters. And no one should try to impose on anyone else and try to tell them that you should do what we said. Everyone should be free to do as they like as well. Of course, those of liberalistic mentality, they're very much strong that everyone should follow this liberal mentality. You should, no one should tell anyone else what to do, but we should tell you that you should tell no one else, that you should, we can tell everyone else that they have to have this liberal outlook. And if you have another outlook, that there should be restrictions on sense gratification, then they're very much against that. And they even wage wars on this, invasion of Iraq, for instance, was because they felt that Mr. Hussein was not a very nice fellow and he didn't allow people to do what they liked, and in Islam they have so many restrictions on women which they're very much against. And everyone should be allowed to do what they like, as much as they like. And on the basis of this, abortion is considered an ethical right, because a woman should have the right to do what she likes with her body. That is the basis of the argument for abortion in the Western country. You have a right. It's your body, it's your life, and you know, who are you to tell me that I can't abort this thing which just happened in my stomach? So this is the liberal, humanistic, secular outlook, which is promoted very powerfully through the educational system, that we are brought up to think like this. Everyone is taught Darwin's theory, which, or not exactly Darwin, but evolution. It's evolutionary theory, which very strongly implies that there's no God in control, or that if God, some kind of God might be there. You can pay him lip service, but he's not really that important. Some kind of guy who opened the factory and hit the first button, and then afterwards everything just went on by clockwork. So it's a big history, the history of atheism in the Western world. But it is the overwhelming mindset in the modern world that we shouldn't be fanatical. There's another thing they don't like that. If anyone has very strong religious beliefs or religious conviction, that is considered to be something very dangerous. Any strong belief is considered to be very dangerous. They said that, you see, if you have a strong belief, then you end up having inquisitions and wars of the Crusades, or becoming a Nazi, so you should be a liberal and invade Afghanistan instead, by not being a fanatic. Because fanaticism leads to wars, and, well, liberalism also leads to wars, but we see we're fighting so that people can be liberal. So they can... Anyway, I don't follow the logic, but they have some kind of perverted logic, that the world would be much better if everyone, just like this, John Lennon made this song, imagine all the people living for today, imagine a world in which there's no religion, and all this kind of, so they have the idea, everything will be wonderful if everyone just live and let live, I'm okay, you're okay, everything's nice, just smile at each other and be happy. You see, any obstruction to our happiness, we should approach it pragmatically. For instance, if you're not happy in your family life, why should you suffer your whole life? Just get divorced and try again. So the idea that personal sense gratification is the... Underlying this is the idea that sense gratification is the goal of life. There's no higher spiritual aim of life. If you like, you can believe in religion. We'll allow... Okay, we'll accept it. If you like, we can believe in religion. But don't be too fanatical. This is the liberal mindset. And it's very powerful. It's very... it's very deeply rooted in the psyche of the... of those who are brought up with it. Although they say you can think what you like, you can think according to what you like, they have a very deeply rooted in the educational system is are these ideas that one shouldn't have any rigid belief system. One should always be open to new ideas. You can't really accept anything as true because no one's perfect. That's one thing they often say, well, no one's perfect. They take that as an axiom. But why no one's perfect? You're not perfect. But why do you take it that everyone's not perfect? That's an axiom. No one's perfect, so you can't really trust anyone or believe anything. So this Western liberal humanistic secular mindset is totally opposite to that of Krishna consciousness, or the Vedic culture, in which one accepts a guru and accepts what he says and follows it. It doesn't. People say, "Well, that means you become stupid. You just become a moron. You don't have any independent thinking." Well, in one sense, that's true, because independent. In the beginning, it's recognized that independent thinking. What is the value? Because what is the value of our? How far can we reach with our intelligence anyway? Guru means who teaches. He brings us beyond the limits of human intelligence. One who has seen the other side, Tattvadarshi. One who has vision of the world beyond our three dimensions. Napiyate anaya iti maya. Napiyate anaya iti maya. One definition of maya is the endeavor to measure everything. The empiric process. So guru means one has vision beyond these three dimensions, three plus one time. And one has to, in the beginning, one has to have faith that there is, that yes, I'm limited. Trividha sima, we have time, space and thought, we are limited. So to go beyond these Trividha Sima, these three limits, we have to have faith that there is someone who has knowledge beyond these three limits and can take us beyond that. Faith is required in the beginning. But the modern way of thinking is that you should not have faith in anything. Faith is equated with foolishness. Why should you believe? We'll discuss this more later. Anyway, as I was saying, in the modern academic bastions of liberalism and humanism, this even they'll say, yes, Krishna consciousness is very good, everything is very good, let's study that also, let's study everything, let's study Krishna consciousness. And they want to put it in a box, and put it under a microscope and say, yes, we have measured Krishna consciousness. But Krishna consciousness, Krishna and Krishna consciousness is not a subject to be studied by our measuring tools. We cannot understand Krishna consciousness by statistical endeavors. We cannot understand Krishna consciousness by comparative religion. If at all we are to understand religion, to actually understand religion, then the last place we should go is to the comparative religion department of the university. They can tell you so many things about religion, but they know nothing about it. They're the furthest people away from any religious understanding. Because, as Prabhupada said, understanding means standing under. But they want to stand over. Okay, this is the Buddhism box. And this is the Islam, but we put it all in a box and we understood it. Okay. And they'll give you a... Okay, mark. 10 out of 10. First prize. Gold medal. You understood. But you can't understand religion by studying it in an empiric manner. One has to live and practice the tradition. And one cannot understand... If one thinks that Krishna... They'll study Krishna consciousness. There's Krishna consciousness, and there's this, and there's that. And you can go any way you like. Ramakrishna's wrong idea. Jato mat tato pat. It's all the paths are the same. So you can follow Krishna consciousness and if you like, and you can study the... What is that book by Skinner, was it? The Varieties of Religious Experience. They study from a psychological viewpoint and say, yes, religion is very good. You see, we find them, by our statistical studies, we have ascertained that those who have religious belief, they tend to be more psychologically stable. So yes, religion is very good. It will make you more psychologically stable. So, I'm not out to here to lampoon every devotee who might be engaged in academic studies, but it is, as I'll describe more, it is quite noticeable how in our movement in the recent years, a lot of emphasis has been put on going to university and getting university degrees. I first heard this a few years ago, that we have to get university degrees, otherwise people won't listen to what we say. They won't respect us unless we have a university degree. They won't take us seriously. Of course, Prabhupada came to preach in the West and no one asked him if he had a university degree. Actually, he didn't have one. He had one. Okay, you're going to have to give me the speaker there. Boishakhi Jo. Phalgun Mashe Boishakhi Jo. This is supposed to happen in 2 months later. Every evening. This will last only a few minutes. Boishakhi Jo lasts only 5 or 10 minutes. Can I have the speaker there? Mic or whatever it's called. Hare Krishna. Yeah, bring it. Hare Krishna. Yeah, you can look. It's quite spectacular, isn't it? This happens almost every evening in the month of Boishakh, which is 2 months after this. It's called Boishakhi Jo. After a long, hot day, much hotter than the days we have, very hot. And at the end of the day, the strong wind will come and blow all the banana trees over. And there'll be a storm, and it lasts about 5 minutes only. And it's nice if you're inside to look at it. If you're outside, it's not so much fun. So there's been a lot of emphasis in recent years in ISKCON that our devotees, we have to get university degrees, then we can preach better, and we can infiltrate the academic world by giving our Krishna conscious philosophy. However, we have to be very careful when dealing with mundane academia. Prabhupada often warned about mundane scholars as being very dangerous, because it appears that they know something. You can find mundane scholars who can probably explain Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy or Sri Vaishnava philosophy or whatever better than most. Some scholars in America, for instance, they could explain the philosophy of Sri Vaishnavism or whatever maybe better than many practitioners of Vaishnavism, but they don't understand it. It may appear that they understand it, but they don't understand it.
because Krishna consciousness cannot be understood without surrender, without faith. So they only have superficial knowledge. Satsarupa Maharaj described once, he went to him when he was doing this library party work, distributing sets of Prabhupada's books in the University of America. He was invited to a meeting of Indologists. And he went and he thought, well, this will be some kind of very elevated talk. But it wasn't elevated. They spoke in a profane way about the topics they were studying as they gradually got drunk. Another god brother, Mahabuddhi Prabhu, told me that he went to meet one of the most prominent Indologists in America. So he entered his office and found him lying on his desk, completely drunk, in the middle of the day. So you may say, well, that doesn't mean that all academics are like that, but it underlines that mundane scholars, they may study what they call Indology or South Asian studies or whatever they call it, but they have no commitment to surrender to Krishna, or rather they have a commitment not to surrender to Krishna. Because you, in the university, you have to teach everything in a relativistic way. In the university is not a place for saying that we will say, or we're supposed to say, Prabhupada is, as Prabhupada said, I have full faith in my Guru Maharaj. Everything he says is completely correct. And anyone who doesn't agree, they're simply nonsense. Namam duskriti no mudha. A devotee, if he's to be a devotee, he has to accept and believe this. But you can't say this in the university. You can't say that anyone who is not surrendered to Krishna, he's a murha, he's a rascal, he's a fool, he's apparently knowledgeable, but actually he doesn't have any real knowledge whatsoever. He's a demon. You can't say that in the university. You can say, according to Bhagavad Gita, anyone who doesn't believe in Krishna is a fool. You can say, according to. But you can't present it as an absolute fact, because absolute facts are not allowed in the university. That's the first principle of university studies. Asatyam apratishtam te. There is no absolute position allowed. Whereas the very beginning, that is the basic principle. Whereas the basic principle of Krishna consciousness is to accept that yes, Krishna is the absolute truth. So at the very outset, the mundane way of thinking and the Krishna conscious way of thinking are opposed to each other. Therefore, although it is possible to go into academia to try to present Krishna consciousness or to try to influence the academia, devotees who do so run the very real risk by associating with such people and by being forced to write papers in a relativistic manner. When you write a paper for the university, you have to write that according to this, this, this and that, or someone else's opinion. You cannot say, this is correct. Everything Krishna says is correct. And everything else is ignorance. One cannot write like that. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, when he first went to university, he first presented his papers, and his professor, who happened to be a lady, told him that you can't write like this. You can't have, this is your Hare Krishna way of thinking. In the university you can't present like this. So he is in the position of being an acharya of Krishna consciousness, being told that he cannot present Krishna consciousness like this because he became a disciple of the lady in the university. Tamal Krishna Maharaj himself said that, he himself admitted that it's very difficult to preserve our Krishna consciousness while dealing with the academics. He said that even Christian academics are really atheists, because that is all the academia will allow you to be ultimately. So even the so-called Christians, if they're in the regular universities, you may say, well, this person, he's a Christian, but it's all compromised. They don't actually, they can't present absolute facts because it's not allowed. So what's going on here, you see, in Krishna consciousness, first of all we accept that there is an absolute fact, and then we try to understand it by hearing from Guru. First we have faith, ādo śraddha, and then we apply our intelligence is directed by Guru to understand what, by Guru means according, Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. The intelligence is trained to understand what is the fact. We begin with faith. Shraddha, Shadde, Vishwas, Kahi, Sudhir, Nischoy, Jay, Krishna, Bhakti, Koile, Sarva, Kama, Kritaho. Faith means to have the firm conviction that Krishna consciousness is a fact, and that by practicing Krishna consciousness, everything is achieved. So that is the Krishna conscious, or the absolute approach. That we start with faith and we apply our intelligence and then we understand. But the atheistic way of thinking is that first of all you should understand something, then you believe. You don't accept something, first of all you have to prove it, or you apply your intelligence, you try to understand, and then only you can accept something. So in this way, they can never properly believe in anything, because you can never fully ascertain anything with the intelligence, with the mind and the intelligence. It's the mind and intelligence are limited, and Krishna consciousness, the beginning of Krishna consciousness is to accept that there is an ultimate principle, there is the unlimited absolute. So, to attempt to understand the Absolute Truth by any other method than the method that the Absolute Truth gives us to understand is from the very beginning doomed to failure. So they cannot understand, but they, according to the Krishna conscious way of thinking, if we are to accept them, if we are to be devotees, then we cannot accept the mundane academic outlook. You cannot have both, because they are diametrically opposed to each other. Either we accept Guru, Sadhu, Shastra are correct, or we remain in mundane consciousness. So mundane academics means, that's what it means, mundane, it means not Krishna conscious. So, there are various elements of the mundane way of thinking which are considered axiomatic. Although they say that, well, we don't really accept anything absolutely, but they have their own axioms. There are axioms in any system of knowledge. People may say, I don't believe in anything. My reply to that is, do you believe what you just said? Then you're caught. If you say, yes, I believe what I just said, then you believe in something. And if you say, no, I don't believe what I just said, that means that your statement is nullified. So we all have to believe something. If you don't have faith in anything,
then you can't even breathe, because you might think that someone sprayed some poison into the air, and if I breathe it with my next breath, I'll die. You can't put one foot forward. You can't walk forward, because you might think, well, maybe the earth is here is not firm. Maybe if I put my foot down, the earth will swallow me up. When we're walking, we have faith that the earth will support us. When we eat, we have faith that the food will not poison us, but it's not poison. We have faith in all of our day-to-day activities. So faith is required, and even in so-called liberal education, in which they say first we observe and then we believe, well, there are axioms in that also. The axiom in that is that we can understand through our senses, that our sensual ability gives us accurate knowledge. That is the axiom they have. So everyone has axioms. Just in Krishna consciousness, we have we extend our axioms, considering the inability of the mind and the senses to understand everything. We accept that, first of all, we accept that as an axiom, that everything that we can see, touch, taste, smell, feel, and hear, that is not the sum total of everything. Beyond this, there is more. We accept that as an axiom, that all of knowledge is not within the tiny range of our sense perception. So accepting that, we accept that there are persons who have knowledge beyond this, the tiny range of our intelligence and senses. So that's actually very intelligent. Whereas the mundane academics, they also have their axioms, such as, one is that human society and human knowledge is always developing and progressing. That formerly our ancestors, they were cavemen and hunters, and gradually we became more civilized, and we learned so many things, and we're gradually developing the fund of human knowledge, and we're gradually becoming more advanced, and everything in human society came into it had its beginning. So even this Krishna consciousness or Vedic culture, it also had its beginning. That there's a theory that, well, Krishna was an aboriginal god, and then some more sophisticated people who are following the Vedas, this aboriginal cult and the Vedic cult became grafted together, and Krishna became identified with the Vedic god Vishnu. That's one theory. If you want, you can go to university and elaborate on it and get a PhD on it. And of course, you'll go to hell, you won't go to Krishna. But you'll get a PhD as you go to hell. You can present to Yamaraj that I'm a PhD. So give me a sophisticated hell. So these ideas that there is no eternal truth, that Vedic knowledge is not apurusha, it's not eternally existing, it is purusha, it's coming from human beings have developed whatever is in the Vedic. Therefore, it's also fallible. If everything is coming to being at some point in time, it's coming to being by fallible human beings, then it's not infallible. It's just someone's belief system. Historical consciousness. The Vedas were written down or composed at some point in time. Some of our devotees believe this. So when I say devotees, I can't actually say they're devotees, but people who claim to be devotees.
For instance, I saw a comment by one of our most famous pseudo-scholars in ISKCON, who was writing something about the position of women in Vedic culture, and he wrote that, well, things seem to go down for women around the time of Manu. But Manu, there's the idea that Manu, he was upholding the Brahminical persecution of the lower caste. This is typical idea of mundane Indologists. So the idea that Manu, they try to place him at some date in time, but we know that Manu is the father of mankind. So if we say the time, they think Manu came into being at some point. This is the mundane idea. Manu came into being, there was someone called Manu, and he wrote all these nasty things, which repressed women, but according to what we understand from Shastra, Manu, he wasn't part of human society, that he wasn't coming at some point in terms of historical development. He is the father of mankind, and he gave his instructions to human society at the very beginning. So it's our own devotees, supposed to be, are infiltrating these ideas into our society. This is insidious, to say the least. Skepticism, that in modern academics, they have their basic set of axioms. One of this is skepticism, and they build on that. So what any statement, whatever statement is made, that is up to question. We cannot accept anything as absolute. Any statement anyone makes, we have to see if we can agree with it. And we'll often say that when we're speaking to people in the Western world, they say, well, oh yeah, I agree with that. When people say that, I say, it doesn't matter whether you believe it in or not. You're agreeing with it, it doesn't matter at all, because you are not the arbitrator of reality. And people often ask us, well, what do you believe in? I immediately tell them, it doesn't matter what I believe in. It doesn't matter what you believe in either. Because our belief is not the yardstick of reality. People think that religion is just some kind of belief which you can change at any time. And we say, I believe in it. But as Prabhupada would often say, it's not a question of belief, we're talking of facts. What does it matter what I believe in? I'm a tiny living being. My intelligence is extremely limited. So it doesn't matter what we believe. We should try to understand what are the facts. So someone, when we're preaching someone in the Western world, they say, yeah, I agree with that. But they think that's a compliment. But we should tell them, you're agreeing with it. First of all, you should understand that your agreeing is of no value whatsoever. If you agree, it means it appeals to your present set of misconceptions. But first of all, we have to understand that I'm full of so many misconceptions, and then we have to hear from someone who is perfect. It means he's taken perfect knowledge from the perfect source. But they will not accept that there is any perfect source. They remain always skeptical. And their opinion can shift or be refined, or they think, well, I'm always improving, I'm refining my understanding of this point. Or they may think that, well, this is my, you know, I'm of this opinion, someone else is of another opinion, and you have every right to your opinion. That's something that sometimes I'm told by certain GBC members. Yes, we respect, you have a right to your opinion. But it's not my opinion, what is the value?
We should see what is Prabhupada's opinion. Otherwise, why are we coming here? What did we come here for? To put Prabhupada under our microscope? That Prabhupada said this and yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, that's quite good. And Prabhupada said this, I think we'll have to consider this a little bit more, because modern research suggests that what Prabhupada said isn't completely true. Or as some of our very intelligent comrades say that, well, you see, we have to understand that Prabhupada was influenced by a 19th century Victorian Bengali mentality. And therefore, this is said by members of ISKCON. And therefore, we have to understand everything Prabhupada said in the light of that. Which is actually extremely offensive, because if this is Guru Shu Naramatihi, to think that he's a person whose outlooks are formed by imperfect people. He's also a product of his culture. He's also a product of materialistic culture. Then why accept him as a guru? As Prabhupada said in his introduction to Bhagavad Gita as it is, there's no use to accept Bhagavad Gita unless we accept that what Krishna says is perfect. Otherwise, why listen? Why take Bhagavad Gita at all? If we don't accept that what Krishna says is perfect, then why listen to him? So if we don't accept that what Prabhupada says is perfect, if we think he's influenced by Queen Victoria or the cultural ethos at that time, then we're thinking that he's just another person, and I'm another person, and 19th century Bengali culture had a very restricted way of thinking, but now in the modern age we're more advanced and we're more liberal and we're more fair to people, and therefore we should reevaluate what Prabhupada says on the basis of our more modern and more advanced way of thinking. See, or we can accept what Prabhupada said spiritually, but we don't accept everything he said materially. So, these are some of the thoughts which are going around our movement at the present time. That even scripture, that's also written by human beings, so nothing is actually... What it comes down to is that nothing is sacred. Nothing is absolute. All ideas and understandings, they're all subject to check. If we make some more scholarship and some more research, we may find out some more things. And then in the light of whatever we discover, then we'll have more understanding. So we'll go and dig up some ancient archaeological sites, and then we'll decrypt the hieroglyphics, and this will increase our understanding of the Vedas. This is how we are to understand the Vedas. And we should understand that, you know, all these acharyas that maybe, you see, maybe they had some kind of, you know, some kind of psychological syndrome or something like this. Maybe they had an Oedipus complex or something. And therefore they formed these opinions. So we should be aware of this. But we ourselves are very balanced, we are very sane people. We're very normal people, we're very advanced people, and therefore we are in a position to... We're not against, we have great respect for all these religious teachers, but at the same time we have to understand they're all humans. So we should understand things in this way. So it all sounds very reasonable, and they say we should be very reasonable, but actually they're being very rascalable, because at least if we are to accept Krishna, that anyone who has this kind of outlook, they may seem very reasonable, but it's a very sophisticated way to apparently they may call themselves friends of Indian culture, friends of Vedic religion, but actually they're the worst enemies because they are undermining the basic principle, which is faith in Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So this idea comes that you see, well, Krishna consciousness is very nice, and it's one way of looking at things, and it's also good. And if you like, you see, you can also be a Buddhist or a Vedantist following Vivekananda Swami, and that's also very good. You see, it's nice. It's very good. You can do this, and if you like, you can do something else because nothing is absolute. And even they will say, they're so reasonable, they will say that you should be open-minded and you don't even have to believe what I'm telling you, the professors in the university. You don't have to believe what I'm telling you. Then why should I study from you? One professor came to Prabhupada and Prabhupada said, what are you teaching? He said, Hinduism. He said, Prabhupada said, what do you mean by Hinduism? And Prabhupada, the professor, being very clever, said, I don't know. And then Prabhupada said, you are a cheater. Because you're purporting to teach something that you don't know. Prabhupada caught it. So this idea. Another very important point is that, as Prabhupada always said, education is meant for character building. It's not simply amassing facts and figures in your head, learning things from a professor who's drunk sometimes. Character building. What is the character of the person who's teaching you? One devotee. I think I saw him here. He told me he's going to go to university to study psychology and all these things. So I said, why? So he said, well, we can learn at university how to deal with each other better and better human relations. So I asked him that, well, the professors at your university, do they have sex with the students? He said, yes, and you're going to learn character, you're going to learn how to be a better human being from them. They'll talk about better relationships and being open-minded and being nice with people, but their being nice is, I'm okay, you're okay, you believe in abortion, that's okay, and you just divorced your fifth wife and now you're going to marry a man. So that's also okay. Give the man a chance, he tried with four women and none of it worked out. So it's reasonable, you can try a man, right? What's the harm? Why are you all laughing? These are the kind of things they say, that homosexuality is, it's okay, it's just a it's your preference, whatever you like. According to the Shastra, it's sinful, but in the modern relativistic way of thinking, there is no such thing as sinful, because there's no absolute truth. When the body is finished, everything is finished. So this relativism, which appears to be very nice, actually promotes sinful life and atheism. It's a covered veneer on atheism. And so I often say that Hitler is better than George Bush, because Hitler said, we're German and we're strong and we're the best, and all these neighboring countries, we're going to kick them all in the head and take them over. So at least he was straightforward. He said, look, the hell with you, we don't give a damn about you, and we're better and we're taking you over. Whereas Mr. Bush says that, well, humanism and liberalism and human rights, and we're invading your country and taking you over. So at least Hitler was straightforward. He was so, but in the In the modern age, you can't, you're not allowed to say that. You have to say, you know, well, everything has to be presented very reasonably. We're very reasonably killing all the animals in the slaughterhouse, because if we didn't kill them, they'd breed so much and it'd be a great problem for them, you know? So we're very mercifully, we're humanely killing them. And the children in the womb, you see, the parents don't want them, so if they were born, they wouldn't be happy. So for the benefit of this child, I mean, we're really only thinking of the benefit of the child, we'll abort. You see? Because we're the well wishers of human society. So, empiricism. The how are we doing for time? The idea that everything can be understood by the human mind, just opposite to the Shastric idea, that everything cannot be understood by the human mind. Jnane prayasamudha pasya namanta eva. Shastric understanding begins with Krishna conscious understanding, especially means to give up even the attempt of thinking I can understand everything by my mind, and become humble enough to understand that I do not have the capacity to understand everything with my mind. But the modern academic way of thinking is, we have to understand everything with our mind. So just actually the opposite of the Krishna conscious way of thinking. Oh yes, well, I've talked about all these things. Ethical neutrality, that we should, multiculturalism, all the different cultures are all okay and everything is good and everyone's opinion is as good as everyone else. Prabhupada, once walking with Dr. Patel on the beach in Juhu, Dr. Patel said to Prabhupada, as Prabhupada was condemning all those who are condemnable, which means those who are not Krishna conscious. So Dr. Patel said, with all due respect, sir, we must have some sort of forbearance for others' views. Prabhupada said, no, because if we have got to preach, we cannot make any compromise. Dr. Patel, you feel that way, we have no objection, but we should also respect somebody else's views. Prabhupada, we have got all respect, but not unnecessary respect. Dr. Patel, but even unnecessary respect, sometimes you unnecessarily go beyond. Prabhupada, we have respect, but a thief should be called a thief. That is truth. Dr. Patel, becoming frustrated, losing his respect. You are the magistrate, and you are the judge, and you are the... Prabhupada, no, I am not the judge. I'm talking on the basis of Bhagavad Gita. Namam duskritino murha prapadyante naradhamaha. One who is a naradhama, he does not surrender to Krishna. This is the judgment. As soon as we see that one is not surrendered to Krishna, we accept naradhama. That's all, whatever he may be. So, we should be very careful about accepting any opinions which are not in line with Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And we should know that if we are to go to the academic world, we're going to be subjecting ourselves to associating with and hearing with hour after hour, day after day, from naradhamas, from atheists, from people who are apparently very reasonable and nice, but are actually demons. And we may be very confident, but in Bhagavad Gita we are warned that sangad sanjayate kamaha, our desires develop by our association. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned us that the first principle of a Vaishnava is asat sanga tyaga. We should give up association of non-devotees. So is it actually true that we are all so strong that we can subject ourselves to hearing from and being in the association of persons who are dedicated to not surrendering to Krishna and studying according to their system of study and not be affected. They are quite convinced that they are at the pinnacle of human civilization and understanding, and that this is the way to study. This is the way we have to study. So they're very convinced of that, and it may seem very convincing that what they're doing, because they bring out so much research and they demonstrate this and that, and to them it all seems very convincing, because that's what Maya does. Maya convinces us that that which is not Krishna conscious is reality. All of Maya simply means to accept asatyare satya karimana, to accept that which is not true as true. And any education which teaches us not to surrender to Krishna, that simply is reinforcing the tenets of Maya, of accepting that which is not Krishna consciousness as Krishna consciousness. And it seems to be real, seems to be true. But the result is that we get in Maya. Egalitarianism. All men are equal. The basic. All human beings have equal rights. But that is not the Vedic understanding. Your rights, you have rights according to your level of consciousness and behavior. Brahmin has more rights. They don't like this. They don't like Manu. Brahmin has more rights because he has more developed consciousness. He won't misuse his rights. Actually, they say all persons should have the same equal opportunity, and they say basically everyone's equal. But it's a foolish proposition from the very beginning, because everyone's not equal. Everyone's different. We are, according to our previous karma, our previous background, some people are more intelligent than others. It's not that everyone is equal. Women are different to men. I'll talk about that in more detail tomorrow, because it's a very easy point to understand, but somehow, due to the modern way of thinking, that has become, it's practically a sacrilege, even in ISKCON today, to repeat what Prabhupada and Shastra said in this regard. Which it may, anyway, I'll discuss that in detail tomorrow, because feminism in ISKCON is a prominent symptom of how these modern, non-Shastric ways of thinking are actually taking over our movement in many ways. Now, faith in Krishna consciousness, what does that mean? That means faith in the Shastra. Yasya deve parabhakte yata deve tata guru tasyaite katitahiyata prakashante mahatmanaha. One has faith in the Supreme Lord, faith in Guru who teaches the Vedas. To such a person, all the imports of the Shastra are revealed. So one is a Guru on the basic principle. Of course, there are many qualifications of a Guru, but one qualification that cannot in any way be compromised, if at all one is to be a Guru, is that he must have firm faith in Shastra. That is called Astikya. Asti. There is, that means the knowledge in the Shastra is. If one does not have faith in this principle, if one thinks that, well, we can accept some things in Shastra, but according to modern science, the descriptions of the universe in the Shastra, well, we can't accept that. That was made up by someone who doesn't know what they're talking about. But we accept all the spiritual parts, but we don't accept the material parts. So this is called Nastikya, or
Nastic, this word is commonly translated as atheist. But actually, astic and nastic, that means one who has faith in Shastra and one who doesn't have. And faith means firm faith. Sarvam etad itam manye yam naam vadasi keshava. As Arjuna told Krishna, I accept everything you say, Krishna. Not that, well, I accept some of the things you say, and other things I'll have to go back to and ask my professor. Actually, his professor was Dronacharya, so if he had gone, Dronacharya would have slapped him in the face. That was his professor. We find in Mahabharata that everyone, even those who are on the wrong side, they have faith in Shastra. They no one questions. Even Ashwatthama, he was told by Kripacharya and Kritavarma. Ashwatthama had the idea, let me go and kill all the remnants of the Pandava force as they are sleeping. And Kripa and Kritavarma, who were with him, they told him that, look, you're gonna get terrible sinful reactions for doing this. And he said, I don't care if I become an insect for millions of lives. In other words, he accepted, okay, I'm going to... He didn't say, I don't believe that. He said, okay, I'll become an insect for millions of lives, but I'm going to do it anyway. So he wasn't a nastic in that sense. He believed. He was a rascal, but he wasn't as much a rascal as those who... In a subtle way, they tried to kill Krishna. The open enemies of Krishna, they told Krishna, you come before me, stand on the field of battle, I will dispatch you to Yamaraj with my arrows. So many fools said that to Krishna. The Mayavadis, they tried to relativize Krishna, that Krishna was a historical figure, or he wasn't a historical figure, he never existed. Krishna is a manifestation of the Supreme Truth. He's a manifestation of the impersonal Brahman. Mayavadis, they try to de-Krishnaize Krishna. So they don't. They superficially accept the Shastra, but actually they're enemies of Krishna. So actually, the Shastra, it's not meant. The Shastra itself bans study of Shastra by people who don't have faith. It said that Shastra should not be studied by Shudras because they don't have the character, they don't have the purity of character to understand, and they don't have the development of consciousness to understand. Shastra is not like some, it's not like they pick up the Iliad or something, some ancient Greek classical work. They present the world's great classics, just like the what's that called? Odysseus? What's that? Anyway, there's the Greek, Odyssey and the Odyssey and the Iliad, and they have the world's great classics, the Penguin series, and one of them is Mahabharata, and another is Ramayana. It's one, and we'll study it. You see, I didn't see you in this university before. I heard you're a professor. You're a new professor here. What do you say? Well, I'm studying ancient Sanskrit classics. Oh, that's very interesting. I'm a professor of Greek classics. Oh, also, okay. So we're more or less the same. No. They got the wrong idea. The Mahabharata is not like the Odyssey. Mahabharata is Shastra. It's not something to be, it's not meant to be studied by persons who are not qualified. First you have to become a disciple, then you can study. Any other kind of study is an offense. Such persons are not allowed to study Shastra because they will simply make offenses more and more and more. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada. Although it is not in our experience, there is a milk ocean within the universe. Even the modern scientists accept that there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of planets
hovering over our heads, and each of them has different kinds of climatic conditions. Srimad Bhagavatam gives much information which may not tally with our present experience, but as far as Indian sages are concerned, knowledge is received from the Vedic literatures, and the authorities accept without any hesitation that we should look through the pages of authentic books of knowledge, Shastra Chakshushvat. Anyway, I don't have nearly enough time to go through all the points here. There's only one of the things. I mean, there's other ways we're not following Prabhupada in so many ways. Also, there's only one area. Srila Jiva Goswami has analyzed in great detail and come to the conclusion that the Vedas are in all situations and in all respects reliable authority. It's not that the Vedas, well, that was good for ancient India, but it doesn't apply in the modern age. Have you heard this kind of atheistic reasoning? That not we can't accept everything because it's out of date. Or Prabhupada was out of date. He didn't know what he was talking about. Therefore, we should, to acquire spiritual knowledge, tad vijnanatam sagurum eva abhigacchat, to acquire transcendental knowledge, we should go to a guru. We shouldn't think that we can learn more about Krishna consciousness through the university. It's a very foolish way of thinking. We should, rather if we are to study, we should study in depth what are our shastras from the proper sources, from people who have faith in shastra. It's a very serious mistake to think that we can increase our understanding of shastra by learning from people who don't have implicit faith in shastra, who don't practice what is in shastra, or who think that it's just another way of thinking. So, Prabhupada, about mundane scholars. That is our aim, to destroy the position of the mundane scholars, not to become one of them. Mundane scholars are called adhyakhik, which means simply sense perceivers, no realization. Stick to your principles and be Krishna conscious. We have to prove to the world that anyone who is not Krishna conscious is a duskritin and a murha. This was Prabhupada's position. So I could say much more about this, and I'm sure that you can all give some comments on this. There are various other ways in which I'm not talking about the danger of that we might not be following Srila Prabhupada in the future. I'm talking about things which are actually going on right now. It might be more diplomatic of myself to say that, well, these things are dangerous and in future it may cause bad results. But it's already causing bad results. It's not that in future it might be bad, so we should be careful, but already we're seeing the bad results of this, in that even within Prabhupada's movement, Prabhupada, like I say, people dare to question the position of Srila Prabhupada as an authority of who we should follow. We find many times that in dealing with social problems in our movement, the devotees, they often quote psychologists and sociologists, mundane, and if someone's having what they perceive to be some kind of a problem, they send them to a psychologist, or they call in sociologists to make studies of our movement, so that we can attempt to improve it. Very strange. It's already there. We give so much credence to mundane academia, and as if the psychology we already have, Bhagavad Gita, is the mind, udharet atmana atmanam atmanam avasadeya, atmaiva hi atmano bandhur, atmaiva ripur atmanaha. Krishna is talking about the mind, and we have in Bhagavatam so much direction. So it may seem that by modern psychology we become more balanced and sane, but if we become a more balanced madman, what is the meaning of that? People say you should be normal. Normal means you should not be normal. You see, in the madhouse everyone's insane, and if you act like them they think you're normal. So from the Krishna conscious point of view, everyone is insane except those who are Krishna conscious. So to go to the psychologists, who this psychology and sociology, all highly atheistic, and it reinforces the ideas that we can become better persons by studying psychology and sociology, but they don't know what the purpose of life is. They don't know that at the basis of consciousness rests on the soul. And all problems in human society come from lack of Krishna consciousness. So actually they should study from us. These mundane scholars, they should study from us. We have higher knowledge. We should demonstrate to them how we have higher knowledge. But instead of, they can benefit by becoming our disciples actually. Not that we become their disciples. So there are other ways. This is my personal feeling. Nowadays we're not allowed to say this is a fact, because all opinions are as good as each other. So in my opinion, which is a useless statement, so many problems, the social problems we have in ISKCON. And social problems, then again, they come out as these theistic problems in which we question the very basis of our theistic culture. Because we think, often, for instance, the Gurukul doesn't work. Prabhupada said we should have Gurukul, but it doesn't work. So Prabhupada said we should have Gurukuls, but it wasn't a very good idea. And Prabhupada didn't, anyway, I don't want to say, but they say like that. He didn't really have full understanding of who we are and where we're at. So better we'll give our children mundane education, and then later on let them choose for themselves. Having been programmed with all atheistic nonsense for the first 18 years of their lives, and had it implanted in them that the goal of life is to enjoy the senses, then afterwards they're free to choose. Where's the freedom? That's what they say, everyone has freedom of choice. We will educate you in all kinds of nonsense, and then after that you're free to choose. But you've already been educated in the wrong way, so how can you choose properly unless you know what is the right thing? But they're teaching the wrong thing, so obviously you're going to choose the wrong thing. And they say freedom of choice. We're very liberal, we give people freedom of choice. But you must go to school, and we will indoctrinate you. And then after that you can choose. All cheating. So, as I was going to say, a major failure of our movement, I'm also guilty, I'm supposed to be one of the leaders, and I'm also getting all this fanfare and respect, I'm also guilty. We haven't implemented the what Prabhupada wanted, Varnashram. Prabhupada saw we're having so many problems, then as much as possible we have to implement Varnashram with going back to the land, living on the land, living simply, according to our way of thinking. Because if we live instead of the Krishna conscious woman becoming an alternative to the demoniac society, we are now very much anxious to become part of it and to be recognized by it. And we think the greatest success of our movement is if Professor Swatalot, Mr. Big Brain, says, yes, Krishna consciousness is very good. And then that's it. That is the success of our movement. That means that we're really being accepted by society. Yes, we should be accepted by society on our terms, not on their demoniac terms. If we become demons, then they'll say, yes, yes, very good. Of course they will. But the real thing is if they say, very good, recognizing that we are different and we have something positive, different to offer, then they say it's good. But rather we can expect that if we're actually preaching Krishna consciousness, there should be lots of opposition. So much of the endeavor of our movement in what we call preaching in the modern age is to try to make the public feel good about us and for this. But that is not our aim. Our aim is to make Krishna satisfied. And the two things don't usually run together. So we don't have to unnecessarily make the public unhappy with us. But at the same time, we shouldn't dance to their tune. We have to dance to Krishna's tune. So this Varnashram and living on the land, Prabhupada wanted that so that we can live in our own communities and not be influenced by all these demoniac ideas. Even nowadays in ISKCON, to use terms like demon and karmi, there are many devotees, they feel, oh, you can't say that. They're good people. They're nice people. And then they start pointing out all the faults in the devotees. You see this, 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 this. And actually the karmis are very good. They're not karmis. They're good people. And all the devotees, they're not. So they're very anxious to be accepted. It's an austerity to be a devotee. It means if we're actually devoted to be devotees, we have to spend our whole life going against the grain of the broader society. It means struggling all our life. As the psychologists and sociologists will tell us, man has a great feeling, a need to be socially accepted. And many of the things people do, much of our behavior is, or most of the behavior of everyone in this world, is to gain social acceptance. We have a very strong thing. But we should understand from the platform of knowledge that to be socially accepted by demons is no, it's means we're in a bad position. So to accept Krishna consciousness means a lifelong struggle in which most people, unless they become Krishna conscious, won't appreciate and won't accept what we're doing. So we may feel that well, you know, I'll just adjust a little bit, and then people say, just like sometimes we hear devotees say, well, you have to watch TV, and then people will think we're normal, and then they'll accept us. They'll accept us, but for what? And we became one of them. They'll accept us, but we want them to accept us as devotees, but if we watch TV, then we're not devotees. So we lost, it's the same thing, selling our souls. We lost our soul for the sake of public acceptance. So our own communities in which we can help each other to be Krishna conscious instead of being compromised by the bad association of the karmis. Another thing, how are we doing for time here? Increasingly our movement is accepting the truths of Vivekananda Swami, that Manava Seva is Madhava Seva. Service to man is service to God. Just for instance, recently there was a tsunami, and ISKCON, along with the Red Cross and the government of America and all these different organizations, they're all rushing to the aid of the tsunami victims and with medical supplies and all this kind of thing. And now in India we've started a midday meals program, which they advertise you feed all the children, and it's advertised they can get a better start in life. So they can study better by getting the good food at midday, and then get a better start. And in other words, we're encouraging the modern education. We're encouraging that they can eat a good meal at midday, and then they can become a successful demon in future. We're advertising. And it came in the newspaper just a few days ago that a prominent member of ISKCON in India, he's a GBC member actually, he's quoted as saying, it was praising ISKCON's program of feeding children, daily feeding school children, and the GBC member was quoted as saying is that, "We believe that to feed a hungry child is the best service one can render to Krishna." So, I propose that we form a merger with the Ramakrishna Mission, because it's service, mundane welfare work, and jato mat tato pat. The only difference is they keep a picture of Ramakrishna and we keep a picture of Prabhupada. Well, there's a lot more differences than that, but that's the direction it's going. And they will rationalize and say, well, you know, actually it's prasadam. But Prabhupada, he did say that no one should go hungry within 10 miles of our temples. At the same time, he was very much against mundane relief work. And actually, in all these cities where they're distributing food to the school children, their families are quite competent to feed them. In Bombay, they're doing it. There's no single person in Bombay who goes hungry, unless they're deliberately fasting for religious reasons. You can go, there are huge slums in Bombay. You go in, you'll find they have, everyone has a TV, there are video shops, there are beauty parlors, everything, they just don't have a decent, they have money. They're all drinking and smoking and everything. So it's not that people don't have money, it's not that people are hungry, but they like to promote, because I asked one of our leaders who's just starting this program in another city, he said, I asked him, why are you doing that? And the first reason he said is, it makes money. It costs us 3 rupees, and the sponsors give 6 rupees. It makes money, and people like us. People think we're very good. But it's promoting that, it's an actual complete opposite, which was said, of course, the person who is purported to have said that, he may say, I didn't actually say that. But he might, it doesn't make any difference whether he said it or not, because he's quoted as saying it, and he hasn't refuted it. So this is how we're presenting Krishna consciousness to the public. ISKCON in 2005. We believe that feeding a hungry child is the greatest service one can render to Krishna. This is not following Srila Prabhupada, this is following Swami Vivekananda. But our devotees tend to think that, well, whatever is coming out of ISKCON must be right. I'm simply asking you to study Prabhupada's books, understand what is Shastra, understand what Prabhupada has taught us. This is a responsibility of every initiated devotee to understand what our founder Acharya has given, and to understand what in ISKCON is following Prabhupada and what isn't. And it's quite possible that the way things are going, that our movement may go the way of Christianity, that they keep the picture of Jesus and they say we're Christians, but they don't follow what he says. This is a very real danger. Again, it's not just something, a danger that might happen in the future. It's going on right now. So I'm very sorry to say this. It may make you feel disappointed. We come to this Mayapur festival for inspiration. But actually these things are going on all around us. So we should be aware of them. Hare Krishna. That's the end of this lecture today. And if there are any questions, I can take them now.
Can I make a comment?
Write it as yesterday. If it can be written down, it's better. You can make a comment now.
I was present in 2005.
Philadelphia.
Yeah, okay. Take the mic.
Hare Krishna. My name is Advaita Acharya Das. I'm from Pennsylvania. I was actually present physically when this Department of Hindology professor of Hinduism from University of Pennsylvania, on the invitation of Ravind Swarup Prabhu, came and Srila Prabhupada got him his teaching propensity. And he tried to become a little bit belligerent, and fortunately Srila Prabhupada was surrounded by Brahmanand and other big sannyasis, so this professor was eased out.
He was physically removed by force.
And this is what Srila Prabhupada is showing by his example, that this talk that I just heard from Maharaj, this is our all. This is it. This is real thing. Getting to universities, and instead of following the acharyas and preaching, if our ISKCON senior devotees go and associate and get those papers, which Ravind Swarup himself never went to get his PhD in theology, and Prabhupada knew that. So, and second thing is that we at our own home can treat our children to as much of Krishna consciousness as much Srila Prabhupada has given us by carefully scrutinizing and bringing them to Maharaj's program. And the last thing I would say is that from 10 a.m. this morning, I have been looking to find out where is Maharaj's lecture. Could somebody print 5,000 flyers and stick them on every palm tree? Because it is therapeutic. It is treatment. This is real thing that Maharaj gave. So this is my request. Maharaj, thank you so very much.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, well, that's wonderful to know that you were right there at that incident. Yeah, Prabhupada actually told Ravindra Swarup Prabhu to complete his PhD.
Yes.
Yeah.
But did not take it.
Hmm?
Did not insist that he should.
He didn't, yeah.
Display it in his office.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and Ravindra Swarup wrote down that this PhD has no importance than what Prabhupada.
Yeah, Hare Krishna. Well, Hare Krishna. Yeah, it's not necessarily true, again I'd like to emphasize, it's not necessarily true that every devotee who is at university is necessarily deviated, but it is a very distinct possibility, as I said, if we're hearing from non-devotees. We're hearing from non-devotees and we have to write and we have to speak according to their terms. The question regarding the faults or merits of this statement. Prabhupada named our movement a society as opposed to a school or institution. So just as in society there is an ebb and flow of liberal and conservative contributions that establish civil order, it is reasonable and a healthy sign to see a variety of conservative and liberal approaches to following Prabhupada's instructions in his absence within our society. conservative or liberal, we have to understand what are the parameters given by Srila Prabhupada and Shastra and remain within them. If by liberal we mean that we redefine what Prabhupada gave us, then that is not liberal following of Srila Prabhupada, that's not following Srila Prabhupada. So I may say that it's healthy to see a variety of approaches. But the approach must, we should, on any line of activity, we should study what Prabhupada has said, what he wanted, and try to understand that and then implement it. Not that we have our own ideas and then we take some quotes from Prabhupada and try to fit it into that. That's the wrong way of approaching it. Bus booking. What's this? It says a bus booking. Is Jagadananda Pandit Prabhu here? No? I have your flash drive, by the way. How to catch the fish without getting wet, that is the art, as Prabhupada said. How to catch the fish without getting wet? Well, actually, we don't catch fish. So. That is the art. We have to go among materialistic people and to some extent we may adopt their language, but the basic principle is firm faith in Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, and that is reinforced by constant hearing from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra and associating with people of similar mentality. Then we can maintain our faith. Live simply in the countryside. How? Yes, it's a big question. It's actually not so difficult. We say going back to the land, but most of the world never left it. We also have to preach in the cities, yes. But householders, generally they can't dedicate most of their lives to preaching because they have to have some method of economic development. So yeah, that is, those who want to know about more about, or who may be serious about this, going to the land, living on the land, maybe you could see me afterwards and I'll give some more idea about that, because it's another whole area we should do. That should be the social direction of our movement. When His Holiness Gaura Govinda Swami was asked about how to solve the problems of ISKCON, he said, "Problem is that they, the devotees, don't have taste for the holy name. To avoid problems, chant good rounds in the morning, preach, and avoid political devotees." Is this a good solution, that we focus on our personal survival, our duty to preach, and avoid political entanglements? Yes, kirtan is the solution. But kirtan is intimately connected with shravan. Shravan is that which develops our faith. If we chant, we may chant the holy names, but if we don't have firm faith, then our chanting won't have the same effect. So we can actually chant good rounds if we're hearing nicely. First we have to hear, then we have to chant. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur always emphasized this. We know in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song, he talks about Gaur Bihita Kirtan, chanting in the manner approved by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, first has to be Gaur Bihita Shravan. We have to hear in the manner approved by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So if our hearing individually and as a society is not Gaura Bihita, if it's mundane scholar Bihita, then our chanting cannot be pure. Opposite anta has to be kept out. The pure hearing has to be there. So it is the duty of the acharyas, especially Sripad Ramanuja Acharya has defined as one of the duties of the acharya to protect the sampradaya from contamination. So that means that the acharyas have to say, this is the correct line, this is not. See, one thing Prabhupada said, he said that we have to cooperate. So often it's said that unity is the most important thing, but not at the expense of purity. If we say that, well, unity, okay, well, this person's criticizing Prabhupada, but they also want to do some service, so anyway we'll be united. Unity means on the basis of what Prabhupada taught us, not any other unity. For our basic point is that we have to accept Prabhupada, we have to accept the acharyas, we have to accept the Shastra. On that basis we shall be unified. Otherwise, if we don't have that basis, then our unity is mundane. There's no use, and then it's like the United Nations. What's the use of their unity? Avoid political entanglements. Yes, as much as possible, if we can, it'll keep our mind peaceful. But in the name of avoiding difficulty, if we watch Prabhupada's movement being sent in the wrong direction, is that very good? Our duty to preach, well, you can preach, but then someone else, the person you're preaching to, they'll come to the temple and someone will tell them, you should go to university and learn there. And then, so people are coming to Krishna consciousness and then getting sent out to the slaughterhouse. So charity begins at home. Assuming food for life. That's another thing, this food for life, this wasn't started, but this name is totally mundane. And it was, devotees seem to think this was started by Prabhupada. It wasn't actually. Interestingly, this food for life, it was started with the specific intent. It was advertised in the ISKCON World Review, a magazine at that time, that you see, just like that, it was given the example of the Salvation Army. That previously the Salvation Army were very unpopular, but then they started their welfare activities and now people like them. So in the same way, we should start Food for Life and then people will like us. But what happened is the Salvation Army was originally a very proselytic, is that the right word? Preachy kind of movement, in which they tried to convert people to their brand of hardcore Christianity. And then they found that so many people were against them, so they had the idea, okay, let's start distributing food and doing welfare activity. And now that's what the people accept them, and people think the Salvation Army distributes food. And no one, including the members of the Salvation Army, have much idea about what their religious message is. Because even the members themselves identify that our movement is, our main thing is distributing clothes to old people and feeding people. Their own members lost the idea of what they're supposed to be doing. So Food for Life was started with the specific intention of emulating the Salvation Army. Pretty dangerous. Anyway, let's read the rest of the question. Assuming that Food for Life is really distributing prasad, what is the harm that they're giving to school children, tsunami victims, or whoever? Well, Prabhupada said to distribute widely to everyone. Prabhupada said, why only to the poor people? Because then you're presenting it as some kind of mundane welfare work. Everyone needs prasad. Why are you rushing off to the tsunami victims? They're in Maya, everyone else is in Maya. Give them all prasad. Every bite of prasad brings the soul one step closer to Krishna. Yeah, but if we identify that prasad should be only given to poor people, and then we advertise we're feeding the poor people, then we ourselves get in that consciousness. And then the idea that we're actually giving prasad becomes relegated to the idea that we're really... People often ask us, what about you? Why aren't you doing things like feeding the poor? And then we'll tell them, well, we are feeding the poor. And they say, okay, very good. And then we don't preach that actually it's prasad, and we actually lose the consciousness ourselves. Because we're not in the consciousness of helping them by giving prasad, we're in the consciousness that we're helping them by feeding them. We lose the consciousness of what we're doing. It doesn't sound like mundane and welfare work, even if it is presented as such. Yeah, then the question comes, why tsunami victims? Why are you all of a sudden interested to feed the people on the beach in Chennai? They were in as much in need of prasad before the tsunami as they are after. Why are you all of a sudden so anxious to feed them? We're all victims of Maya, birth and death. We should... There's a disaster! Immediately send money! There are 50,000 people in Tamil Nadu who are victims of a major disaster. What's the major disaster? They're not Krishna conscious. Immediately send food grains, feed them. Yeah, well, that's not a disaster. That's the actual disaster. But we are thinking tsunami disaster. It's only a symptom of the disaster. The disaster is that we didn't feed them before. They're unlucky. They were just eating fish. That's the real disaster. Hare Krishna. This session is finished. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.